This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of Now and Not Yet. Pressing in when you're waiting, wanting, and restless for more. Written and narrated by best-selling author Ruth Cho Simons and is available everywhere audiobooks are sold.
You're listening to the Enneagram and Marriage Podcast. I'm your host, Krista Harden, and I'm so glad you showed up for our relationship chat today, as well as for you and your people. We're all about living intentionally here so you can experience joy and balance in your relationships once again or for the very first time. Be sure you hang with us on our social media platforms, and if you like research like I do, make sure you check out our website at enneagramandmarriage.com for our weekly newsletter, freebies, and so much more, as well as at Instagram and Facebook. We have so many goodies to share with you. Let's dive right in together. Thank you so much for joining this episode of the Enneagram and Marriage Podcast. I am so thrilled that you are here to walk with us through working on toxic patterns in your relationship. We are talking about trauma bonding. We are talking about how to find your way when you have been stuck in very painful patterns together. And I am so proud of you for pressing play today. And we have the wonderful psychotherapist, London-based researcher, influencer, Charisse Cook, Enneagram 2, with us today for the journey. This is another edition. You can make a little new spot in your artist palette to make room for some new colors that you can add to this relationship palette you're building. So excited for you to do that. I know Wes and I had a great time this weekend just standing atop that mountain. Sometimes you get to climb up and see for a little while the whole view. Other days you're just scrapping down at the bottom of the mountain and preparing, but we got to see all of our kids thriving in beautiful ways with Hannah having her final recital for her students. And it was just so glorious. Such a glow, such a type four. Like a light show, ribbons, banners. And then Melody got to have all these beautiful wins with her dance again, and then all different kinds of dance. And then she's also been given, people have been sharing with her lately, like, Melody, whoa, your voice as a nine. And then Jack has had his beautiful, he's getting ready anyway for his Beauty and the Beast. He's going to be playing Gaston's assistant, LeFou, and he just finished soccer season. And it's been really neat to watch them develop. Because this is Wes and I's glow. This is our way of shining in the world in many ways, is we're lifting up the next gen together. And it's an important piece of our lives to occasionally just get to not just be in all of the working, same as you, where you're always working hard, you're taking your little rest, but to get to see the journey, to get to see some milestones of what you're doing, isn't that cool? So I know some of you are end of the year enjoying those moments too. Don't forget to stop and savor a bit and then allow yourself that chance to say, whether it's coworkers you're helping, or friends, or maybe just looking at a client's journey or a patient's journey. I know a lot of you are pastors, teachers, people who are just pouring into the lives of others. Take a minute to survey sometimes and just look as we now delve into this deeper dive on how, if you're struggling, if you're frustrated, you can actually learn new steps and tools for getting through some of the more toxic behaviors. When you wind up in a place where you know you don't belong, when you find yourself in the darkness and you need to climb up, but you do not know what to try next. So we all get there sometimes, friends. We are in this together. Just before we bring her on, though, I just want to remind you, if you have enjoyed the Enneagram and Marriage Podcast or my book, make sure you take some time to review those so that we can share them with others. I recently switched over to Megaphone podcast platform. I want to make sure everybody still has access to this. And so make sure that you spread the word by sharing a podcast review on Apple. It's in the show notes. Or make sure you leave a review for the book if you bought it on Amazon or wherever you bought it. It just helps to share your light even more and the light that I have to share too. So thank you in advance. I love to share with you and hopefully others too. All right, let's talk to Charisse. Charisse, thank you so much for joining the Enneagram and Marriage Podcast. So happy to have you.
I'm very excited to be here too. This is a whole new subject for me, so I think we're going to have a great conversation.
Me too. I just love all of your beautiful expertise on helping us with toxicity and relationships, how to get healthier. You are wildly successful and have a beautiful Instagram. Everybody has all your info in the notes, but tell us a little about yourself. And thank you for digging into Enneagram with us too, by the way.
100%. I am always interested, and I've been interested in the Enneagram for ages. I can't believe I haven't explored it before now, to be honest. So you've given me the perfect excuse.
Yay! Oh my gosh!
Yeah, totally.
Well, we're so happy. What are you discovering about yourself? What are some of your top types, or what's your main top type showing up?
My main type was type two, which probably isn't a surprise for a therapist. I'm
Right.
guessing. Probably
Correct.
pretty typical.
It
So yeah, it was like annoyingly accurate, of course, as these things often are.
is.
And but I also loved it because it just felt like there was this real synergy between the Enneagram way of looking at things and also therapy and relationship work and things to work on and the strengths that you have, but also your areas for growth. So I really loved that. And I kind of also loved that the Enneagram doesn't hold back in telling you this isn't helpful or this is the shadow side or this is challenging. And I love that because that's how I work. I love to work on how to grow, how to be better, how to challenge ourselves. So I wasn't expecting that and I was grateful for it. I loved it.
Oh, I'm so glad it can be an additional tool in your toolkit now, too. Because sometimes I was just having a client yesterday, and it was that experience of we hit these different walls, and then I really was like, I need to be the hope bearer. And then I was like, oh my goodness, there's an Enneagram angle we haven't explored. Have you tried this in your marriage? And he had not. And it was such a moment of a win for the two of us. So I just love that it can be an additional tool for you. And yes, you're a helper. I have two helpers on my team, two type two helpers on my team here. And I'm so grateful.
Okay.
But tell me about yourself outside of Enneagram. Now we have a warm understanding of your heart for people and your ability to read other people's emotions. So that's beautiful.
Well, I guess, yeah. I mean, I recognized that really early on. And it was actually amazing that at school, even one of my teachers randomly just said to me, "Oh, well, you'll probably go on to study psychology because you're going to be really good at that." And she really planted a seed in me and she really saw me in a way that I didn't see myself. I was only like 15 or 16 at the time. And I held on to that and then went on to study psychology and loved it. And when I finished my undergraduate degree, I was in London, didn't really know what to do with myself, started volunteering, and yeah, found myself working first with people with disabilities, and then I moved on to working with people with addiction problems, and I just worked as a volunteer, and I just found the work so rewarding and fascinating. And I was so fortunate. They just said, "Look, we really like you. Come on board. We'll train you. We'll finance, further study. We'll finance you doing your master's. We'll train you in-house." I mean, it was a real change of direction for me in my life. I was about 24, 25 at the time. And it was truly, I feel so grateful to have found what I believe is completely the right thing for me and my personality. Because it's really challenged me. It's really helped me to grow. And I do feel like it suits me and what I have to give. And so yeah, so I worked at this treatment center for 3, 4 years. And I actually started my own treatment center for another 3 years. And I've been in private practice now for crikey, nearly 15 years. It's unbelievable. So yeah, it's just, I mean, that's obviously very much a synopsis. But yeah, I love my job. I have the best job in the world.
Oh, that's beautiful to be able to say, I am doing this out of a space of talent and gifting and love. Like, wow, I am so happy that your clients get you and that we are getting to learn from you today and be with you. I'm sure you're bringing some co-regulation to many of our listeners, even now, with that. And you're across the pond, as we can hear from some of your phrasing, I just love. So tell us a little bit about where you live.
I live in London. I work in London, but I actually live just outside London in a place called Richmond, which has obviously become recently famous with Ted Lasso and stuff like that. And I love it here. It's so beautiful. And yeah, I get really inspired by people in the city and the arts. So London is just perfect for me. I love working here. I work almost entirely online now, which I really feel sad about in some ways because I used to have this amazing office in South Kensington and I loved being in the center of it all. And but yeah, I mean, for me, London is a very exciting place. There's a lot of cutting edge stuff happening here. It's also pretty much the birthplace of attachment theory, which is what I specialize in. So yeah, it is an incredible city. I love it. I love it. I'm a real city girl.
Fascinating. all the richness of the area that you are in right now. Of course, I knew London, but just hearing you say that, I know our audience hears me often talk about my favorite authors, Tolkien and Jane Austen. So I love your area. I love hearing about Brighton, Bath, London, all these spaces that I always get to just see these great minds. So I know you have the great heart, the great mind, and you're noticing the culture as a two. I know a lot of twos when we came home for COVID, a lot of twos took that the hardest. So I love that you still come out and touch base a little bit. I noticed the two therapists on my team need that.
Oh, that's
So
interesting.
yeah, absolutely. So I love hearing you just be so real with us. That's one of our favorite things on this podcast is let's be real. We're people too. But tell us a little bit about, since you are so close to the cultural feel, how is the culture changing in terms of some of the language we're hearing nowadays when we're thinking about toxicity and relationships with just knowing there's trauma bonding? Like, help us to unpack that phrasing or that cultural movement a little bit, if you don't mind.
Absolutely, because the English are famous for their stiff upper lip, and there's a lot of stigma around therapy or anything kind of spiritual, even. So I think there is a definite shift happening. And we've got the younger generations to thank for it because they're so much more interested, aren't they, in personal growth, in their own development. And I love working with young people. It's so much easier working with young people in a way because they're so willing. They want to know, right? Whereas a lot of my job is kind of convincing people to engage and care and be a bit more emotional or whatever it might be. So I wouldn't say there's a big tidal shift. I would say it's more a slow burn development culturally over here because it is very embedded still culturally to share honestly and people still struggle with that, but I think that because there's so much more information available online, the younger generations are aware of being triggered and toxic behavior and red flags and all this language that's come into our sort of world. But it does really, I think, point to important stuff for us to notice. And people are actually much. They are becoming more open for sure, and I love that. And it's a little bit of a contradiction because there is so much psychoanalysis and psychotherapy here. Freud practiced famously in North London here. We've got his couch. We can go and view the room where he did all the work, the birthplace of attachment theory. So it's kind of there are people who are very interested in analysis in a very intellectualized way. And then now I think the younger generations are coming up and really paving the way for prioritizing their well-being. But the British Reserve is still there, I notice. It's still there across the board. So slowly, slowly we'll get there.
Yes, that makes so much sense. And we often Enneagram type whole cultures, knowing that there's just going to be an overlay over the culture and everyone still has their nuance. And we sometimes say the British culture is more five-ish and that, like Jane Austen, like you said, pulled back and a bit more reserved with, like, I'm not going to put all my cards out there. So, how lovely for you to be seeing, yes, there's beauty to that perspective, but there's also beauty to those who can help. And this is, in this case, the younger generation to say, we want to know, teach us, help us to see the authenticity. And as you said so well, they're naming some fun phrases, and we don't want to overdo and make things that there's no more diagnoses, but they're also helping us to see it's as an older generation, it's always been there, but we're just giving it voice now. So you're telling us that, trauma bonding and difficulties in relationships, this is nothing new. We're just starting to give some voice to it all over the place, right?
That's absolutely right. And that's part of the reason why I actually felt inspired to start an Instagram account and do my online teachings because I think particularly relationships, therapy is very intricate and difficult and challenging. But relationships is a lot about education. It's a lot about just understanding how relationships works. You know what Don't do that. It's not going to get a good result. You know, these are relationship skills, right? So it actually was born out of a bit of a frustration in me because I just, in a way, want to tell people a little bit, look, just try these things and then let's talk about more of the detail of your life. But there's a lot for us to learn about relationships. And that's also what I liked about the Enneagram is kind of, wow, it lays out some pretty clear stuff here to really open our eyes up to. It's not a mystery why we're behaving the way we're behaving. That's also what I loved about it. It's like, oh, this is typical of me, or my kind of personality is going to lean towards this, or my interpretation of things is going to lean towards this. And that's the kind of stuff I love exploring and learning about.
Yes, and you can use overlays of Gottman and EFT and IFS and all these different systems, whichever is most helpful, of course, in order to walk through your own typology a little bit. Or even as you perhaps get more familiar, or some of our listeners have been using Enneagram for a while, others are newer to it. But for all of us to remember, we can nuance out and say, what's my secondary type? Kind of noticing if you take the Truity
Love
test, which
that.
I know you did, which one do I also score high? And which one seems to be at the top for me? When I really look at the core fears. So, but clearly you're a heart type. Clearly you understand relationships on such a deep dive level. Some of our listeners don't even know what the term trauma bonding means. And I know different people have different explanations, but what would you say in general if somebody's hearing that phrase in culture and they're wondering, am I trauma bonded with my spouse? How do I prevent it? What does that really look like?
I guess it's a fascinating thing because I love the word kind of bonded there because that is such a deep craving that we all have. We want to connect with people, but we can only connect from a place of our own familiarity and our own experience. So if we come from a lot of trauma, and most of us do, but you know, if we come from trauma, you know, a degree of neglect, abandonment, criticism in our upbringing, you know, our needs unfortunately were not met, whether in a subtle way or very overt ways, we are going to have quite a traumatized way of attaching to people, you know, and that shows up in how we attach, and we can attach in very insecurely attached ways. And what we do, there's this terrible phrase, but it's incredibly powerful, and I'm not entirely sure I'm going to get it right, but it's something like, we will find someone whose bite matches our wound. And I think that is a powerful image for what trauma bonding is, which is we will naturally attract and be attracted to people who will meet us and our traumatized parts of us, and then continue on to perpetuate the experience. So we are habit-forming creatures and we seek familiarity in our relationships. So when we're looking for a partner, it's a highly unconscious process that we're going to seek out what's familiar. And if trauma and upset or pain, you know, or you know, being betrayed, etc., if that is part of our story, then we are going to attract someone like that. And then we have these relationships whereby we don't ever want to let go of them. I think that's one thing. Sometimes we can have traumatic relationships, we can have dysfunctional relationships, but sometimes we can walk away. Sometimes we can just break up with them and get it over and done with. When we're trauma bonded, that's the difficult part. That's when we stay attached to people who we shouldn't necessarily stay attached to because it's not healthy. What bonds this couple or this partnership is actually trauma. It's not love. It's not hope, it's not respect, it's not kindness, it's trauma. Two traumatized people, it's that proverbial two people kind of drowning, trying to cling on to one another, and both of them probably drowning at the same time.
Oh, that's really a good analogy too. You've really helped us to get it. And I think you've explained it more clearly than we've ever talked about it here. So thank you. And thank you for the grace around it so that we don't feel like now I'm doubly shamed because, you know, this has
No.
happened. You're like, no, this is like we're creatures of familiarity. This happens to a lot of people. And sometimes you get really stuck there.
This episode is brought to you in part by Beyond Ordinary Women Ministries, which prepares Christian women for leadership. At BOW, we believe that every woman is a leader because she influences someone. So, whom do you influence? Do you mentor a woman? Serve in the workplace? Or do you lead a small group? teach the Bible, or even lead an entire ministry? No matter who or how many you influence, our free online resources will help equip you. Our videos, podcast episodes, and articles from experienced women leaders will encourage you and perfect your leadership skills. They offer wisdom for dealing with ministry pitfalls, current biblical issues, health for your own soul, and insights for shepherding others well. In addition, BOW offers Bible studies designed to connect women of multiple generations. They provide a challenge to both women new to the Bible and those wanting to dig deeper. Be our guest and browse all of our free resources and low-cost Bible studies at beyondordinarywomen.org.
Absolutely. And I think I absolutely want to take the shame away from it, because in a way, we've all come from trauma and hurt and pain in some fashion, and it is going to be what we do. And even if we're in a relationship like that, it isn't doomed for failure. You know, this is what I really want to motivate people to do, is to sort of work on their relationship, to embody something that is rooted much more in love, much more in care. Because if we are just unconsciously doing what we are accustomed to doing, we're not going to grow and things aren't going to change. We're going to keep sort of evoking the same behavior, and we're going to keep displaying the same behavior ourselves, which is just going to perpetuate the pattern. So I'm all about breaking the patterns. It's not about shame. It's not about, oh, just wave a magic wand and do everything differently. It's like we can change our behavior. We can challenge ourselves to sort of really try to grow.
Oh, I love that. And so, you know what I'm going to ask now too is, we have our listeners, and some of them are just like, we did that. We've walked through, I often call it our stages of our Enneagram glow, the way we shine, the way we bring our charged up, beautiful light together and then exude lighter shadows. And so as we come in with these early shines and healings, then we of course approach that dark night of the soul and the shadow work. When couples are coming to either of us for help, or our listeners are like, I'm in a dark place, maybe even complete darkness, what's something that you usually help people to start with to say, let's work on some of your trauma in your relationship?
Well, something I will ask my clients is, I'll say to them, are you in enough pain? Have you had enough pain? Because of course, that's also what's familiar to us, isn't it? It's being in pain. And so it almost doesn't occur to us in some ways to do something about it, or to stand up for ourselves. Or sometimes we just accept the pain, and it's not pain that's useful for growth. It is real, real pain. And that's often because we are motivated by pain. When we are hurting enough, that is when we can have that drive in us to be like, oh my God, I have to do something here. I have to get myself out of this. So I will capitalize in the best possible way, I hope, on people suffering and say, look, have you had enough pain? Because it's going to hurt what we're going to do next. And you're going to need to be motivated to do it. And the way to be motivated is to say, I don't want to feel like this anymore. I cannot do this anymore. So I think when, you know, it's that whole thing, you know, every breakdown is a breakthrough. You know, let's get to a point where it's like, what, anything would be better than this. And I'm like, great, let's roll up our sleeves and do something about it.
How lovely that you meet people right where they're at. Even when that happens, you don't say, okay, you know what, you're a little too deep for me. This is a person who's a two. You're like, I am in it with you. I love that.
Is that a two?
Yes.
Right. Classic.
Absolutely. It's like the two and the four are really known for the heart. But two, when they're healthy, they take on some of the boldness of another type called the eight challenger, which, like you said, you kind of take on that boldness, but in a gentle way. And that's really healthy, obviously. And then adding in that ability of type four to sit with people in their dark night of the soul and to not run. Whereas like maybe more immature too, or any of us who were like, say, 17 or 18 years old, like any kid or immature person, are, you're going to hear it and you're going to say, I can't do this. I need positivity all the time. But instead I hear you saying, I invite that in. I welcome people. In fact, this is when the work gets done. So listeners hear that when Cherise says that, like, It's going to take pain for you to change. What a brilliant reminder for us, because we often think we can change more easily when we have just a little, but you're like,
I think so, definitely. It takes a lot of discomfort for us to kind of challenge the status quo. And relationships are, by their very nature, they are so unconscious. So the work that we've got to do to really make something more conscious, more aware, more in our everyday consciousness, that, you know, that is kind of challenging. And so, yeah, that's what it's all about.
Yes. And that's, once again, I hear you saying, I'm validating that it's not intentional. It's just, it's hard for us to break patterns of toxicity when things are okay. But when they're really bad, now they're desperate. You're not leaving them. What are ways that our listeners might be able to stop? I already want to encourage people to reach out to you, but what's something that sometimes a practice you take people on early in this change process to help them to walk through a little bit of this?
Well, I think it's kind of, there are many approaches that I take, and there are sort of a lot of steps that I take. But something, I guess, that is a starting point and that we will return to time and time again is we have to begin to learn to emotionally regulate. And another phrase that I use for that, which I love, is self-soothing. Because when we are hurting, right, when we're in pain, when we're trauma bonded, when we're insecurely attached, that we're in pain, and then we're in survival. You know, we're in some kind of fight or flight, and so the nervous system is dysregulated, and that too can become completely normalized. You know, and we live in this space of dysregulation, being triggered constantly, and we're just in reactivity mode, right? So that, I think, is the single most important thing to start with, is start beginning to recognize the sheer reactivity that we're living in, that we're not thinking things through. We're not being thoughtful about our choices. We're not giving time to reflect and challenge ourselves about what we're doing. You know, I'll often say to clients, you know, you are making choices, but I'm pretty sure they don't feel like choices to you. And they're like, no, I'm not choosing this. I'm like, well, we need to get you to a place where you recognize you are choosing things and feel a certain way about what you're choosing. So emotional regulation is at the heart of my work, because I want people to be really accountable to themselves and incredibly loving in how they go about life. And that takes pause. That takes intentionality to really make that central to us, because it's much easier to just react. And then we're just in these unconscious ways of relating and behaving that where nothing new can happen.
Yes, and that's really helpful, because some people have maybe been working with a coach or therapist who unintentionally maybe skipped that important space and went right for, you know, a mental process and said, like, let's just go ahead and get you thinking about your childhood. And instead of just pure analysis, you're helping people to say, you're not going to be able to take the steps you need to get healthy unless you self-soothe, unless you emotionally regulate. And that's really important for you as a listener to hear that that has to be unique to you, maybe by your Enneagram type or some of the ways that you've probably, maybe could give us a few tips for people to start this journey to say, how do I even calm down? Because as we both know, sometimes people come in a panic.
Absolutely. And whenever we are at our most in need of emotional regulation is when we are least inclined to emotionally regulate, right? We're so worked up, we're so justified in what we're about to say, and we've just got to say all this kind of stuff. So I think that requires, I guess, a degree of skill, and I hope a lot of compassion, but also humility to recognize. And that's where the pain piece really comes in, I think. It's kind of, we have to recognize, hold on. I know this space. I know where this goes. I know how this ends. This isn't good. Let me please bring some compassion to here right now. And I'm very, very big on compassion, especially working with people in relationship, because there's a real lack of empathy in our relationships. When our relationships are struggling, they've been like that for a while. we cease to really care about what our partners are thinking and feeling, their perspective. We're much more concerned about our own thoughts and feelings. So this beginning thing of having compassion for ourselves, having compassion for our partners, and then also really challenging ourselves to have a practice around, you're saying, what are practices that people could do? I think having a practice around, who do I want to be, and what do I want love to look like in my relationship? These are for me like crucial foundations that we need in our partnerships. And if we keep coming back to that, clears the path ahead for us a little bit. We can't do some stuff because it's not who we want to be and it's not love. So it's kind of those things are really, really important.
It's almost like a temporary band-aid solution to say, okay, let's just fix it. Let's just have diplomacy versus like, hold on, what are my values around this? Or what are my boundaries that I need to set in order to feel safe and regulated? And you're saying, don't just jump into like, again, strategy, problem solving, family of origin, like start looking at how am I feeling internally. What do I need in order to feel like I'm myself and I'm not dissociated? These are great tips, as well as thank you for saying this. Trying to be aware that we're more inclined to do this first. It's first of all, we're not inclined to do this for ourselves. Sometimes we just go back into addictive patterns. Second of all, we're still more inclined for us to do it for ourselves. So you added that third layer, which I think is so important. Your spouse matters too, your partner. So tell us what that might look like if we're trying to foster some compassion for them too. We say it a lot, but maybe we could put a little flesh on that. Like, what might that look like for somebody?
Well, in therapy, we're very keen on getting to know one another's histories because when you know where someone comes from, it becomes that much more difficult to judge them and to dismiss them and how they are. And so there's a very important part of relationship therapy, which is about really doing an archaeological dig with each other about where both people are coming from, because there will be very real reasons about why everyone is behaving the way they are behaving. It's not sort of a strange surprise, right? So I think returning to not, I think the love and care when we're going through a difficult time in our relationship can sometimes be really, really difficult. But by remembering and keeping in mind our partner's stories and histories and our own, can really invite a much more nurturing, caring part of us to come out, right? To sort of, because we are creating a relationship. It is something that is takes time to create. So it is like an art, it's an artistic moment. So we have to bring this understanding to one another. So I keep in mind and I will listen to each other's histories. And then I will really challenge people later on and say, why might this have been challenging for your partner when your partner comes from this, and this? Oh, these were the core things that he shared really, really rocked him. And now you're being a little, and then, and it's kind of because we need to learn. We can be callous. There isn't a lot in our culture now that really encourages us to be tender with one another anymore. And so that's what I really invite, is something whereby people can find their way back to each other on a very human level and obviously in a very loving way.
I love that. You're saying there's a true narrative underneath, and we can approach that together with our, often needing a coach or counselor to help, but just inviting every listener to get your partner story, get their dreams within conflict, find out what's really underneath the surface of this frustration they have with you or you with them. And I like, and even the pattern, right? Because we talk about pursuer distancer patterns. Like, if they keep distancing, like you're saying, there's a story behind that. So thank you for fleshing that. Because I myself, too, sometimes I wonder what does that look like? And you've put some flesh on it and reminded us. So what I was going to ask lastly was, what would you say are some of the toxic trauma patterns you see? Sometimes we do feel all alone, where it's like, I'm sure nobody else has this pattern in a relationship. Like, what are some common themes you've sometimes seen with the traumas people experience in as a couple?
Well, there are a lot of themes that are very, very typical in relationships, and there are themes that surround stuff like blame. And neglect, which again, you can see the real pattern with something like that. There's also something really, really powerful whereby we reject people before they reject us. I think this is such a sad thing to observe that I see quite a lot in my practice, which is we can feel so hopeless about relationships, or we can have such low self-worth when it comes to what we think we deserve in relationships, that that can encourage us to hold on too tight to the people that we love. But it also can encourage us to find fault with people, to blame them, and to only see the negatives, and in a way become rejecting of them ourselves. And then they reject us, and then we go, well, I knew it. I knew they were going to reject me. And then that kind of fulfills our expectation. That's something I see a huge amount. And that's really something I would love people to have more understanding of, is that we are going to project what we expect, and we are going to create a very familiar dynamic in the relationship. We are, you know, we're going to unconsciously create it. And we need to be so aware of that, because we can dodge that. And in fact, we can make it so different that it becomes healing rather than yet another pattern, another thing. That for me is the most sort of prevalent pattern, is that we will continue to perpetuate patterns that of which that we are unaware. So we have to keep learning. Why am I doing this? This is familiar, and really call ourselves out.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for just noticing that that callousness can take over in our relationships, and that we can really reject each other instead of what we actually need, which is to give it a chance to see, am I going to be rejected? Can I first show love? And I'm hearing this come full circle back to your comment about how we have to self-soothe in that meantime, in that liminal space, right?
That's right. That's it. Because we're gonna get angry. We're going to get hurt. We're going to get let down. Again, all things that we're probably familiar with. And so to stop in that moment and go, yes, okay, maybe this is really disappointing, but am I going to go into my trauma around it? Am I going to fall into this huge narrative I have around how lovable I am, or how likely people are to meet my needs, or how emotionally available someone is? It's kind of, let's just keep it in perspective so we can build from here, rather than it to reinforce every fear we have. Entrench the patterns even further, and round we go, and things don't change. So the emotional regulation is really challenging in these moments, but it really, really changes everything, because unless we do that, we're just going to be reactive. And that just means we're doing the same old stuff, and we're going to get what we've always got.
Oh, thank you for reminding that that's not what we want. We want better and better relationships, and closer. And it is going to happen if we just take these grounding steps and then move toward each other after that, not just grounding within ourselves and boundaries, healthy boundaries, so that we can attach, right? And you're here at the center with John Bowlby's work and doing your own attachment with your beautiful new book coming out, Charisse. I'm so thankful and excited for you and your amazing Instagram. What would you say would be the best place for people to start with you? Where would you think, gosh, the journey really begins together here, the way I've created it? Because I know you've created a safe, nurturing environment.
Thank you so much. Well, yes, I post on Instagram every day for reminders and little nudges. 100%. That's a big focus of mine. But I also have on my website, I have a whole kind of sort of education journey that people can go on completely for free, where you can learn about relationships, learn about skills, why we do what we do. That's all available on my website. And then you can also access my book, which is called The Attachment Solution. And I also have an online course for people if they want to go even deeper, called 10 New Behaviors, which, as the name suggests, is all about doing things differently and really drilling down on what that would look like.
Oh my gosh, that's great. The free course, the book, the Instagram, where you're very warm and giving people that relationship that they crave. Instagram is a very two space. My daughter, who's a four, told me that. I thought it was a very dark night of the soul four space because it is that too. But she's like, Mom, it's really a space for two, connection between people. People are looking for that there. And I think you really grab them where they need to be reached. And we try to do that with our writing, but there you are face to face. It's beautiful. And then also, like you said, you have the course and even another course in your new book. So we're just thankful and excited for all your beautiful work in the world. And everything is in the show notes. But thank you so much for coming on, Charisse.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for being such an incredibly warm, beautiful, enlightened host. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. I am ever so grateful that we got to talk about how to work out the toxic patterns in our relationships and get some really good tips inside and outside of self-soothing, how we can do that, how we can regulate, how we can show compassion, and allowing us to step into these more healthy behaviors so that we can really not have to hit those pain points all the time together. But when we do hit them, so that we can absolutely get out of them without further hurting and wounding each other and ourselves. So make sure you head to the show notes for Charisse's beautiful Instagram page. Make sure you also head over there in order to check out what we have going on at Enneagram and Marriage or to leave a review. We would so appreciate you. And I will talk to you soon. Bye bye.
Thank you again for listening with us. It was so wonderful to have you. I love knowing we're doing this journey together, not perfectly, but with love, grace, and hopefully some fun too. If you love today's episode, make sure you leave us a 5-star review at Apple Podcast or Spotify so others can find it too. Visit our show notes so you can get all the links from today's show, as well as EnneagramandMarriage.com, the Instagram, the Facebook, and all over the place. Make sure you spread the word. Love living intentionally with you. Bye-bye.